Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we have with us a very special guest, Robert Bannon. Bob is the admin over at the Ask the Softball Umpire Facebook group. He's also an umpire. He does high school, U-Trip, as well as some college stuff. So we're just going to get to know him a little bit and find out what's going on and what his journey's been like.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's been a long time coming. I think we reached out some time ago and said, hey, let's get you on the podcast. And so here we are.
And I'm glad
you really do appreciate it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So I want to start by giving people just kind of a sense of who you are and why your perspective matters to our listeners.
Sure. I started umpiring, and every step that I took was really someone pushing me along the way. I didn't go the traditional route where I go to camps and I'm trying to get, you know, noticed. People came to me and said, hey, you know, why aren't you doing this level? And have you thought about doing college? And, you know, introductions were made, and it worked out for me pretty well. And then I'm online, I'm looking at this coaching softball group where they're asking a rule question and literally hundreds of wrong answers. It's driving me nuts. And I thought, God, there should be a site or a page where someone could actually ask umpires instead of, you know, getting a lot of bad information from fellow coaches. So of course I create it, and here we are almost 30,000 members later. And, the idea really is for umpires to answer questions. The problem is we can't stop non-umpires from answering, but we do try to curtail it and try to trim the just off-the-wall answers that sometimes you see out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know I've enjoyed the Facebook group for sure, and as I'm, you know, you're a listener of the podcast, so thanks for that. And so I know that you know that we've, you know, found some fun things to talk about sometimes when people post in those Facebook groups, and it is a little frustrating. And I'll tell you, and from my perspective, for yours especially, when people come in and they answer a question and they don't give a rule reference, so it's like, well, I don't understand. Why did you guess and add to the confusion? And so eventually, sometime down the road, because, you know, not all the admins, not all the experts can get right to those comments first, right? Some people, in fact, I know we have an avid listener that I think is the first comment often. So I don't know. You probably know who we're talking about.
Yeah, I think I know.
Yeah. And so it's like, man, if you just like, here's your question. Hey, great question, coach. Here's the rule reference, you know, here's where you can find the information, and we're done. Because so many times the bad information comes in, and it causes now more discussion that goes the wrong way. And you're like, oh,
sure. It's almost I got unwind on that. Stop. Yeah, it's almost impossible to stop it. At the end of the day, it'd be a full-time job to monitor every single comment that's out there. We do try to kind of, you know, shepherd it along the right direction. We've had John Zaneski, who's another umpire, is a co-administrator of the site, and he does a really good job. Lately, more than me, I feel almost guilty. But we've gone through different trials of deleting answers that were incorrect. But sometimes the wrong answer and the follow-up to that wrong answer is actually more informative.
Yeah.
So we've tried to designate people as group experts, where you know that you're actually listening to an umpire. And I will tell you, it gets very hostile. If God forbid I delete something that's just absolutely off the wall, unsupported by rule, and I remove it, I mean, they you know, try to private message you, and it gets extremely hostile. It's so unnecessary.
Yeah, for sure. So you talked a little bit about being pulled along the way or pushed in that direction. I had a similar thing, you know, from the podcast. You know, my story, my journey as well was very similar, because I was coaching fast pitch softball, and so didn't do a lot of umpiring in the school season. I did all my stuff in the summertime, and then went to a summer thing, and somebody said, why aren't you doing college? Duh. You know, and like, well, you know, I don't know. And so a bit of a combination between the two. Have to go to a camp, have to, you know, well, you got to quit coaching, first of all, right? And then go to camps and that kind of thing. But so I made it into the NCAA space, and have really enjoyed umpiring in that arena. You know, it's a little different, you know, than
others.
But then also tell us a little bit about like the level that you've attained, Bob, and then what it took to get those assignments.
So, you know, when I was doing tournament and high school ball, I actually did my first, this is crazy, I did my first college game before I did my first high school game. Not many people can say that. I was doing it. Wow. Yeah, I know. It's I was doing a U-Trip tournament and someone asked me about doing college. And I said, well, you know, I don't think I'm ready for that. And, oh, Bob, yeah, absolutely, man. I can put you in touch with the right people. And they did. And the guy did. And I ended up doing D3 NC2A before I did my very first high school game at any level, freshman, JV, whatever. And then at that point, I'm thinking, well, why am I not doing high school? Makes no sense, right? So I started doing high school, and I really do enjoy the high school. It's such a different atmosphere, to me, a varsity high school game as compared to, let's say, a D2 or D3 college game. It has a different feel to it. It just seems a little more pure. I do enjoy the game, but it talk about an unusual journey.
That is definitely unusual.
I don't think I actually know a single person who could ever say they did a college game before they did a high school game.
First I've heard of it, Pete.
Usually the advice, at least that I've gotten, has been along the lines of get yourself in high school. If you want to get towards the college thing, the summer stuff's good as like a supplemental, but it's like get to high school, get to the postseason, start to get recognized in the further and further rounds of the postseason, and then hit those camps. And then move up the NCAA ladder. And that's kind of the progression.
You know, the funny thing is, though, the very first assigner that I ever got a game from at the college level, and I'm low college level, right? I remember talking to her and she said to me, if I had known that you had never done a high school game, I never would have even thought to write down your name. So she just assumed, you know, it was all tournament stuff. So
Yeah, it's definitely the direction it comes from. When I was talking with Mike about it, Mike Burwell, about going into the NCAA, you know, umpiring space, he said, I don't think you should do that. You haven't even done any high school postseason. You know, and I'm like, well, it's because I'm a coach. I didn't have an opportunity, but I've done really high level summer games. And he's like, not the same.
I've done USSSA down at Space Coast, where, you know, it's their national event. They have a lot of national events, but their World Series. I did that tournament. I did the 18U final. That does not compare to a state high school final. At any round. You know, I'm not talking about the final. I'm just talking about the playoffs in general.
Yeah, the pressure is unbelievable there. Yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different.
For sure. Yep. It took some experience for me to believe him on that, but I did come around. I did come around for sure. All right. So listeners, we sent Bob a big list of questions and we don't have time for all of them. So I went and handpicked several. So I'm going to surprise him with some. But first, just to kind of level set, I'm going to put him on the spot and I'm going to say, think about this for a second, Bob. What is one of your examples from your own experience of something we do here on the show sometimes called bad umpiring?
Oh, so you just did a show recently about don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Okay.
What was the name of it? Don't
be that umpire.
Where they say, don't be the umpire said, well, last time, or, you know, that whole thing. I'm more of a technical guy, right? My job is not to write the rules. My job is to enforce the rules. So whether it's the illegal pitches or whether it's the, you know, the things that often don't get called, you know, I think those are the things that either people don't know to call them because they choose not to become very knowledgeable, or they don't want to deal with the aftermath. So I know and anybody listening now will know that this wasn't rehearsed very well, but, you know, you did kind of get me on the spot there. But I think your don't be that umpire is the one that kind of resonates with me, where it's those types of things that you mentioned that just drive me insane. Just I have a very low tolerance. I will admit it. When I'm working with someone I have never worked with before, and I hear certain things at a plate meeting and I'm thinking, oh God, I'm going to be in for it. Right. Or they show up or they show up and, you know, the pants are wrinkled and the shirt's wrinkled and they just look sloppy. And I think to myself, that and a bad plate meeting, you already got two strikes against you. This job's hard enough. Why start with strikes? You know? Right.
Exactly.
So it just drives me nuts when I see that. Coaches do the same thing. You know, coaches judge you when they see you. Coaches judge you when they hear you say nonsense at the plate meeting. So don't do that kind of stuff, you know, and you're not starting with two strikes. Yep. Just like a battle. For sure. Can you imagine that? So anyway.
Yep. So perfect transition there. So, you know, in all of the time that you've been umpiring in the different types of games and stuff, and we do get put often with umpires we've never umpired with before. After a game, if somebody were to ask, so is that a good umpire? Is that a bad umpire? Now, we would never say it that way. But internally, what do you evaluate? If you look at somebody and you say, man, that's a good umpire, right? You just had a series with them and you say, that's a good umpire. Or you had a series with them and you say inside your own head, because we would never say it out loud, man, that's a bad umpire. What's the difference between the two? What makes a good umpire, Bob?
So it's ironic that you're asking this question, because in my high school association, I often get assigned with someone who maybe is looking to step up. So I get the call that night. Okay, Bob, what do you got? You know? So this one's easy to answer. The good umpire is the umpire that knows the rules. You don't have to know every single word in and out, has the good mechanics, but it's the one where to make it to that next level, to make the great umpire, right? You have to be the one where the losing coach says, man, I'd like to have that guy again. Or the partner says, man, I'll work with him anytime. What is that? That's communication. That's being where you're supposed to be. I don't want to have to worry if I'm on a three-man crew, if, you know, my guy at the plate, let's say, you know, we're rotating, whether or not he's going to cover that guy at third or what have you. At the end of the day, I want to be able to trust someone I've never worked before is going to be where he's supposed to be. So a lot of that comes from getting that initial trust level, and you get that almost right away. I mean, if you don't have that after the first inning, there's probably a reason you don't have it. You know, it's that extra communication. It's looking sharp. It's showing up early. All right. If you're supposed to be there 45 minutes before a game on, let's say, the high school level, obviously it's a little earlier in college, showing up 30 minutes before a game, people are starting to get nervous. I'm your partner. I'm starting to get nervous. So, you know, it's you can do everything right, but just not shine. Does that make sense?
It sure does. So, yeah.
Would you say that's the key, like, to building trust with other umpires in the crew, is showing up, looking the part immediately, having that good pregame, having that good plate meeting, the first inning, being where you're supposed to be? You're going to find your trust with them starts improving right there?
No. Well, what I would say is all those things are prerequisite, okay? You have to hit all those things to even be eligible to be
table stakes. Yeah, table stakes.
All right. Yeah. Once you get to that point, once you've done, you're there early, you look good, you know, you have a good plate meeting. All right. Now this is maybe someone who's going to be a good umpire, right? You know, in the first inning, unless it's a walk fest or there's just not a whole lot to do, and you know, we've all had those games, but generally, you know, after the very first time they're supposed to move. All right. If this is someone that you can, you know, look at and go, hey, he knows what he's doing. Do they come out and trail the batter runner? Yeah, there's nobody on. The girl's probably going to make it by a mile. Doesn't matter. Get out from behind the plate and trail the batter runner. Don't be lazy. Listen, if I'm on the bases and I look and I see a guy who doesn't take one step after the very first batted ball, instantly my thought process is, great. You know,
it's going to be a great day.
and sometimes that's unfair, right? We have bad days, and sometimes we don't feel great. We, you know, we don't have that the jump in our step that we sometimes otherwise would. But, you know, if you look and that batted ball is going and the mask isn't coming off with the right hand, or let me say the correct hand, and he doesn't move from behind the plate, you know, yeah, I'm thinking, no, I don't think so. So I really think those other things, not to say that makes you to the next level. I just think that that's a minimum, if that makes sense.
It sure does. Good point.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You can finish that, because
I was just going to say the only other thing I want to add to that is communication. We should be able to communicate almost like it's telepathy. Yes, we all have signals and we give each other a nod, or, you know, we know when we're looking at each other, even if it's a slight nod, what we're saying. And if that's not happening, you know, sometimes you have a breakdown.
So what does that sound like? What does that great communication sound like during a game? Is it a lot of, so if I was just listening and so someone was only playing the audio of the game, it was on radio for people who used to listen to games that way. Hey, am I going to hear a lot of, you know, I got three. Am I going to hear, you know, going out, going two man, like what am I going to hear? The kind of things that are going to mean great communication.
All those things are absolutely true. What I'm thinking here is the deviation. All right. So if you have a lead runner and there's a potential play at third, and it is the plate umpire's responsibility to get that lead runner at three, you know, and you hear the plate umpire yelling, you know, I got three or, you know, I've got the lead. That's okay. I don't know that it's necessary because you're supposed to have that guy. To me, the key is the deviation. When you deviate, you communicate. So let's say you have multiple runners and you have the plate and you're the plate umpire. Well, what have you got? You know, you got your tag at third, right? Well, what if the ball's hit the right field? How are you supposed to watch a ball get caught in right field and watch a lead runner at third leave early? So that's when you want to have, you know, let's say a base umpire yell, you know, I got the tag at three, something like that. Those other examples that you gave, Pete, absolutely. I think those things are key, but exponentially more so when you deviate from the standard, if you will.
Yep, for sure. I couldn't agree more. I actually got vapor locked one time because there was a over communicator, and I'm saying over communicator. I'm not saying he did anything wrong. Division one umpire. I'm on the field. Division one game, and there was a hit, and I thought I knew where I was going. And next thing I know, the umpire's screaming. The plate umpire's screaming something. And I'm like, I stopped. Like what? Like I thought I did something wrong. You know, and that's like. No, we were just over communicating. And then it turns out that assigner expects that, right? That's the feedback that assigner would give, is that they want that kind of communication.
They do. I do think that they want the communication, even when it's not necessarily a deviation, that they do expect it. I will say that if I work with someone, and or if it's someone that I haven't worked with before, and you know, I mean, 10 to 1, if you haven't worked with someone and there's a lot of play going on, you know pretty early, okay, this guy knows where he's going. He's going to be where he's supposed to be. At that point, I'll probably communicate less on the sort of standard moves on coverages. But on the deviation, I don't care who you're working with. I don't care.
Yeah, you're going to yell it.
Every single day, you know, you got to. Absolutely.
Yeah, good point.
And so, you know, thinking about, you know, being on the field and everything, have you ever known in real time that you like missed a call? And if you did, how do you handle that in the moment? So when you go, David and I have talked before about a time where you sit there and you go out and you're like, holy cow, why did I say out? My brain said safe. I saw the person hit the bag and the word that came out was out and I don't know what happened or any semblance thereof.
Sure. I would love to sit here and say, no, that's never happened to me. I get them all right. No, of course not. All right. Anybody who's an umpire who has answered that question and said, nope, that's never happened to me, you are lying. You know darn well it's happened. It's happened to the best. It's happened to all of us, right? So, of course, it's happened to me. And I will tell you that early on, I had a problem with this. Like, I had a little bit of indecision after a call where I thought, oh, man, I kicked that. And it would eat at me. I can't remember who it was, but someone gave me some good advice. And the advice was, take every single bit of focus you have and concentrate on the next play. Because the moment you're thinking half about the next play and half about the play that you just kicked, all right, you're just going to go. You're just spiraling the drain. Just, yep. You know, forget it. So how do I handle that? Exactly that. I have to put it out of my mind. And the only way to put it out of your mind is replace it with something else. And that is 100% what's going on in the next 30 seconds. Yeah, it's happened to all of us. I mean, you know, none of us like to kick a call, of course. You know, it does eat at you a little bit. We go back to the car afterwards and, you know, you go into the locker room and, you know, you have your buddy who laughs at you and says, you know, you called that one pretty quick. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I kicked that one. So, sure.
So, yeah,
of course it's happened.
Yeah. Do you see, you guys, I don't know if you guys have paid attention this past weekend. Did you see what happened in Major League Baseball where that one umpire, I think it was C.B. Buckner, had two strike three calls reversed with the
oh no,
you know, they can call for anything. He called strike three and he missed. One time he missed by 0.2 inches, but because it's computerized,
less than a quarter
of
an inch. Yeah.
So it's like that's tight. That's not anything. And you know, my son was like, oh, he's terrible. And I'm like, but in real time, if you weren't looking at that box on TV, you wouldn't necessarily know that. But you think about his mental perspective is like he just did two in a row. If he was dwelling on that at all. And on top of 40,000 people.
It was a 2-1 and then it went to 2-2, then it went to 3-2, and both of those second balls were on appeals that were overturned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yep. Like I mean, I can't imagine what it must be like to be on the field with that, thinking to myself, what am I even doing here? You know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just happened to me very recently. It's funny when you set up that question, Pete, it was, you might remember, I think I called you that day after the game, but Bob, I was on a college field and, really early in the game and I was on the plate and play at third, you know, multiple runners on, base hit to the outfield. There's going to be a play at home. Oh, nope. There's not going to be a play at home. Now there's a play at third. Uh-oh. And so I am, busting, you know, as far as good as David busts up to third base, and I didn't get nearly close enough, but here comes the play, and the ball beats the runner there, and I pause. So I did a good thing, right? I'm like, hold on, don't call it too fast. I paused. What did you see? Well, the ball beat the runner here, but I did not see a tag out. Oh, as soon as I did it, I went, uh-oh. I did not see an out, you big dummy. And of course, it had to be with a fairly famous Midwest coach. And, you know, so she and I had a bad game for the rest of the game together. But, you know, I had a call overturned, you know, by video review. So, which I'm pleased as punch that we have it. We got it right for the girls. You know, I feel better about that. But boy, she sure didn't feel better about me after that one. So,
you know, I like the video review. I don't know how I would feel about an ABS equivalent.
Right.
You know, I
yeah, I'm of the. Somebody asked me very recently. Yeah, somebody asked me very recently what I thought about it, and I said I think if they're going to do it, they need to do it. Just balls and strikes by the computer, then it's fine. Yeah, I'm not even going to bother.
I have
so
to.
So don't do it if not.
That makes for a very boring game.
I would think it will. Yep.
Be careful what you wish.
Yeah, for sure, and that's on them. Yeah, not me, because I certainly don't wish for either of it. I think it should just stay as the game. I love the video review for the bases and, you know, plays at the plate and that kind of stuff. And I think Corey's done a great job, you know, taking over that part of the program for NC2A, and a tough job because, you know, what can you review? What can't you review? You got to be careful about, you know, what would be a dead ball, and if I reverse that, I can't reverse it. Now I'm placing runners. Now I'm, you know, there's all kinds of caveats that had to go into what's going to be reviewable and that kind of thing. And that's a tough job, but boy, we are getting there. Pete, did you pick out one last final question for, I'm going to say the first of multiple interviews with Bob Bannon here?
Oh, that's nice of you to say. I'd love to return.
I don't know. There's a couple of things, but like, I mean, just kind of, if we're going to stay on topic, there's a little bit like, how do you review? So do you review your own performance after a game? And then how? So thinking about, you know, what you did well, what you didn't do well. Obviously, you have the post game with partners, but then how do you accomplish that self-reflection portion?
So yeah, absolutely. First off, I don't care what level you're at. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. If you think you are, you know, the bee's knees, you have to solicit information from your partner. Some partners want to give you information and feedback, but they don't want to appear, you know, they're being a little cocky or patronizing. So mm-hmm. ask for the feedback. I ask for feedback. Sometimes I get it. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I agree with it and sometimes I don't. But I always consider it, I always take it seriously because I think that's important. It's always good to get someone else's perspective. Sometimes I try to watch it on video, but that's really hard to do because, you know, the videos are focused on the players. And on the ball, not necessarily, you know, the umpire, the mechanics. There are times where I'll go and I'll watch a high level game and I'll imagine myself or how I would have rotated or how I would have moved. And I compare myself to that, but that's very hard to do as well. So if I had to give one answer to that question, I would say that probably the thing I do most is solicit feedback from people. And it's tough because a lot of people just don't want to give you feedback. Also, if I can add, that if someone does ask you for feedback, regardless of what level you are, give it. You might learn something based on the follow-up exchange. So I think feedback between partners is absolutely critical.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that happened to me as well after that game I was just telling you about. My partner, who is a very good friend of mine, very good umpire friend of mine, I said, so what'd you think of the zone? He's like, I don't like to talk about people's zones. I'm like, oh, great. It was that good, huh? Okay. Well, here we go. Let's have it.
You know what, though? If I had an area where, you know, let's say it's the weakness The weak edge of my zonus is the bottom. And if I start to trail a little bit down, you know, I start to feel it. And after the game, I'll ask him, was I a little low today? No, I thought it was spot on. Or, yeah, I thought you might have come down. But you know it when you're doing it more often than not, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Yep, and I'm the same way.
I want that feedback. I really do.
Yeah, this, yep. I think Dave and I were both smiling for people who are just listening, because the most common complaint of mine is if you take the true zone, the proper zone, the ideal zone, and you take the whole box and you move it down, that's probably how I call it. I'm off by like, I've just shifted down, and it works that way, where I don't call it the highest high, and then my low could be a little low. And that is the thing that I've got to watch for consistently to make sure that I'm not getting that. Because I want to give the pitchers what they earn and focus on, you know, for the sections I work most often, it's that front knee. And I'm going to give it, even if it falls out afterwards, you know, it's still across the plate at the knee. But, you know, if it gets, the catcher catches it low, you're never going to hear the end from the batter's dad behind you.
Yeah, we're going to put a whole episode on that. It'll probably be the next one that we record. Bob is going to be Pete. I haven't told Pete yet because I had this come to me in a dream, and it wasn't a dream. It was from Frosty. You get your call out here on this one. So Frosty was the other umpire with me when he said, you know what? So tell me about that bottom of that zone. And I said, man, so she didn't like it. The coach didn't like it much. And if you've got a pitcher that's throwing a really good drop ball, a really good drop curve ball, and you got a catcher that's sitting 3 feet back from the point of the plate, she's going to catch it low. It might go mid thigh on the batter, you know, and you know, you got the second baseman in there hitting, and she ain't but 4'11 and a half, you know, on her tippy toes. And so they catch that ball at the ground. It's like, I don't care. And so I want to finish with one. Bob, and this is very technical because you're a very technical umpire, right? So I want to have a very technical thing. And as we're talking about that pitch and we're talking about tracking pitches and things, everything that you see, every camp you've ever been to, when they talk about tracking pitches, you track the pitch. High school and USA ball, I don't know about your trip, so I'm sorry I don't do your trip, but high school and USA ball, very similar, right? You track the pitch all the way to the catcher's mitt with your nose. NCAA, you track the pitch with a slight head move, but you watch it all the way to the glove.
Sure.
I have said for my entire umpiring career, why do I care what the ball did after it left from behind the plate and then went to the catcher's mitt? I'm watching the strike zone, which is in front of the catcher's mitt. And if that ball enters the strike zone, I'm calling it a strike. Why do I got to track that pitch all the way to the glove?
Well, what are your thoughts? For me, it's two things. One, it's a little bit of credibility that you are watching it all the way through. But the other thing is it's speed. I mean, when you make a mistake calling a pitch, is it because you called it too early? I mean, if someone asked me today, what's the number one mistake new umpires make? Okay. I would not hesitate. It would be they call pitches and plays on the field too early. Right. So, you know, you take, I just worked with someone last week, wants to move up to varsity, and he's calling it as soon as the play. I mean, you know, just as the ball's hitting the glove, you know, he's calling a strike. Take a breath, right? So when you are watching that pitch come in, right? And, you know, either you're doing it with your nose at the youth level, or you're kind of like the slight tilt with the MC2A. Either way, it forces you to take that extra half second. And you'll be so much more confident, you'll look more credible, and most importantly, you're going to be more accurate. No question in my mind, you're going to be more accurate.
Love it. That's really great. That's great advice. So essentially, credibility, timing, and accuracy. Yeah, I love it. That's three really good reasons. So, Bob, we keep these pretty short. We would love to have you back. So, Pete, I think what we need to do is make sure that we have some topics that, you know, we want to ask the softball umpire and get Bob to call in and engage with us in that particular specific topic in conversation. Bob, it's been great to get to know you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for participating with us. And thanks for everything that you do for the umpiring community and trying to lift that community of umpires up to make sure that we're putting a good product on the field for the girls, because that's essentially what it's all about.
And for us as well, you've given us some shout outs and stuff like that on in some of your posts, which has been really great. We appreciate it.
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you something. I mean those things sincerely. There are posts that you guys put out that, You know, I not only post online, but I also send it to sort of my offline group, if you will, and say, you got to listen to this. So, awesome. And my favorite one was the, you know, don't be that guy. I'm probably getting the title of it wrong, but
it's Are You the Other Umpire was the name of the episode.
What is it?
Are You the Other Umpire?
Yes. Yes. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. That one actually, we have to give credit. Yeah. Right. We have to give credit on that to Jerry Fick and the OHSAA, right? That was his article from the OHSAA white book, right, Pete?
Yeah. I mean, it was from there. I don't remember who wrote it, but yeah, that was where it came from.
Okay. So Jerry Fick and his team. Anyway. All right. So, Bob, thank you so much again for coming with us. And
my pleasure.
Listeners,
appreciate the
That's
invite.
What we have. Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome. That's what we have.
Yeah, and listeners, if you enjoyed having Bob on and want more episodes like this, you know, let us know. Let him know. Let people know that this meant something. And if there's anybody you think you'd like to hear from, let us know. Let them know that you want them on the show.
And please check out Ask the Softball Umpire Facebook group. Join that. You'll get some really good information there.
Yep.
Thanks,
all right,
gentlemen.
Everybody. Take care. Thanks. Have a great one.
Until next time.
Thank you.